Samurai Japan hosted the Netherlands for a two-game series in Osaka, and it wasn't pretty. We have a look at that series and check in on Japanese players and MLB spring training on this edition of the Japan Baseball Report.
You're listening to the Japan Baseball Report, your weekly English language podcast that provides news and notes related to Japanese baseball.
Well, World Baseball Classic qualifying was taking place in Arizona, and spring training is in full swing pretty much all around the baseball world. Samurai Japan got together for a two-game mini-series versus the Kingdom of the Netherlands. In a nutshell, Japan hardly broke a sweat as they won 5-0 in the opener and followed it up with a 9-0 victory in the second game, only allowing one hit in each game. But first off, let me say this, and I really like what the Japanese are doing. It isn't the first year that they've done this. It's last year, it was the Czech Republic who came over for a couple game miniseries. And the year before, it was the Australians who did similar. And there's always talk about growing the sport of baseball around the globe. But in a lot of ways, there are some opportunities that can't take place because of the length of the season that baseball plays, the potential injury to the players. But Japan inviting what I would call other nations or smaller nations to play miniseries certainly helps do a couple things for the sport. And one of them is that it gives the Samurai Japan an opportunity to see some players that maybe aren't necessarily going to get an opportunity when the MLB players come, and as well as some of the other NPB players who weren't invited or did play in the Premier 12 last year. And as well as that is you're looking at guys like Shohei Ohtani and Shota Imanaga, Yoshida Suzuki, Yamamoto. Those ones not getting a or not playing because they were over in the MLB. And domestic players like Shugo Maki, Kensuke Kondo, Shota Morishita weren't in a selection of this particular squad. So to evaluate some of the new and young blood was a great opportunity for Samurai Japan to do that. It also brings attention to the sport. So for example, like the Netherlands, who are trying to take their country to another level on a consistent basis, it helps raise the profile of the sport in the Netherlands. And I think about it a number of years ago, I had a colleague that was coached with, and there was a World University Games were being played in Singapore. As they were being played in Singapore, one of my thoughts was why is it that their Singapore has a team, they're playing Cuba, they get beat 27-2. What relevance is it for the game that they're allowed to be able to even play in a tournament like that against a country like Cuba? At the end of the day, you have to look at some of these other countries. They need to see that there is a route and there is a path that you can play, and you might be able to go and play somewhere else if you get good. And so that's the other piece. But also from a business perspective, nearly 30,000 fans were in attendance for the first game of the series, and in the second game, it was just over 20,000. Not a full house at the Kyocera Dome, but fair turnout nonetheless. I would think that probably Osaka or Tokyo, for these type of tournaments, they might be better off in maybe the more rural areas like Fukuoka or maybe even the Dome in Hokkaido to be able to play the series. But that is how it operated from that standpoint. And I think the games themselves, well, the first game, Samurai Japan beat the Dutch 5-0, and it was hometown hero Hiroya Miyagi of the Oryx Buffaloes who got the start in that one. Ended up going three innings and faced the minimum batters and struck out four. The game was over really in the first inning as Shin Mizutani of the Hokkaido Nippon Ham Fighters, who was the Interleague MVP last year, homered to lead off the game for Japan. And for Japan, who pounded out the nine hits, Giants infielder Naoki Yoshikawa was the only player who had two hits on the night. On the other hand, the Dutch only had three base runners all night, as Dragons Yushi Hashimoto allowed only one hit. And Lions Tetsuya Mai gave up a walk, and Atsuya Horia, the Carp, ended up hitting a batter. So those were the ways that the Dutch were able to get on base. In the second game, it was close early, but it was over by the time we got through the fifth inning. A 7-run uprising where Japan sent 11 hitters to the plate, allowed them to cruise to victory in that one. And that is how that series basically ended. So two hits in two games for the Dutch. and outscored 14-0 with basically almost a somewhat of a B squad for the Japanese in that one there. Well, that's our quick peek at the what happened in the international series. We're going to come back and take a look around Major League Baseball, and we'll give you an update on all the Japanese players. There are 15 players currently playing in Major League Baseball this year, or at least trying to play in Major League Baseball, that are participating in spring training. A couple players may not make the team or make their teams respectively out of training camp, but we'll take a look at that and we'll come back in just a moment. You are listening to the Japan Baseball Report, brought to you by Last Raps Baseball. Join our Facebook group called NPB Japan Baseball Report and connect with other fans of the Japanese game. If you aren't on Facebook, be sure to bookmark our YouTube channel for live events in the 2025 season. Well, first kicking off with the National League, and there's more players that are Japanese playing in the National League than there are in the American League, and we'll begin with the San Diego Padres. So Yu Darvish was set to make his spring debut on Friday of this week, but because of weather, they pushed that back to Saturday. Darvish, to this point, has only pitched in simulation games, and at 38 years old, he is getting a little bit long in the tooth, but is still performing at an elite level when healthy. And one of the things about Darvish is they haven't announced their opening day starter, have the Padres, and there is a potential that he is going to be in the mix for that. Obviously, Dylan Cease is the other one, and they've got Michael King as well that are vying for the start, but Darvish is who they are pointing at, who anchors the staff to be able to get the nod there. And his teammate, Yuki Matsui, durable bullpen arm, came across last year from the Tohoku Rakuten Golden Eagles. When we watched Tohoku games, watching Matsui pitch, who pitched 10 years in the NPB, sometimes really hard to watch Matsui close out games. He throws a lot of pitches, gets himself into trouble, falls behind counts at times, and just doesn't always seem like he can get a 1-2-3 inning. He had a pretty decent year for his first year with the Padres. He appeared in 64 games, and he really relies on three pitches. It would be his four-seam fastball, split finger, and also his slider. But he also throws a couple of other different types of breaking balls as well. They say a sweeper and a curveball. And if you can tell me the difference between a slider, a curveball, and a sweeper sometimes, it's all a bit of a fine line depending on how they do it. But Matsui at this point in time has had a steady camp so far, as he enters his second year of a five-year contract with the Padres. There was talk that the closer for the Padres, and they did have some bullpen movement last year, as there may be a possibility that he could be on the move and maybe Matsui would get a look at the back end. I'm not so sure at Major League Baseball the level that he would be able to perform there, but he certainly can do well in the seventh or eighth inning roles, in situations where he may have to face more left-handers, but that is where it stands with the Padres. On the other side of the coin, we've got the Chicago Cubs. They are going to be playing in Tokyo at the Tokyo Dome against the Dodgers on March the 18th and 19th, and one is going to expect that Shota Imanaga is going to be on the hill. Imanaga, he's got himself some elite command, and when you look at some of his metrics, he's got an elite spin rate on his 92-mile-an-hour fastball. He's had a really steady spring so far for him as he's starting to sort things out. He is 1-0 so far in a couple of games. He's worked already 6 2/3 innings, allowing 5 hits, 1 walk. He has struck out 9, but he has given up 3 earned runs, pitching to a 4.05 ERA. And Imanaga, it is expected he's going to be the ace of the staff, where it'll be followed up with Justin Steele, Jameson Taillon. It is Matthew Boyd and potentially Colin Rea, a former Fukuoka SoftBank Hawk. So it looks like that he is going to take over the mantle as the ace of the staff of the Cubs. Meanwhile, his teammate, Seiya Suzuki, a bit of a rocky offseason for Suzuki. Suzuki was part of a lot of trade speculation through the offseason. And really what's happened is there's 4 outfielders for 3 spots. They've got Ian Happ in left field. They're going to be going with Pete Crow Armstrong in center. And the acquisition of Kyle Tucker in right means that Suzuki is the odd man out. But according to Craig Counsell, we've heard that He is going to rotate Suzuki through, so he's not just a designated hitter. There is going to be an opportunity for him to play in the field. And he doesn't really want to be a full-time DH. So going into spring training, that was a bit of a problem. Well, what could stake your claim is go out, play some good defense, and go out and swing the bat. And in 8 spring training games right now, Suzuki has struggled. Currently 4-for-22 with 4 runs driven in. He's walked once and struck out 7 times. And he's got 0 extra base hits at this point as he's batting that 182. But it is Wrigley Field where he will be playing in the season, and that's not where they're at in spring training. So just because you put up spring training numbers that are a little wonky doesn't mean when you get to the friendly confines of Wrigley, you're not going to be able to produce. Well, our next one up that we're going to take a look at is going to be Kodai Senga. And Kodai Senga, there's a lot of expected from him this year. And really in spring training, he has flashed a 96 mile an hour fastball. And one of the pitches he's been working on has been, he has developed a sinker to go with his ghost fork. So his sinker ball moving into the feet of a right-handed batter, something that they have been working on with him. He's appeared in one game already in spring training this year, working a couple innings, allowing 2 hits, walking none and striking out 2. So they really need him to be the mainstay and who they've got. And more recently, if you're into it, Japanese musical artist, I guess it's Yusuke Kimiji, I think I've said that properly, has released a song called Ghost Fork. And last year, if you were following the Mets, there was a player, Jose Iglesias, had a song, and it was called OMG, and it seemed to be the rallying cry for the Mets. Well, maybe this year the Ghost Fork is going to be the rallying cry for the ball club in honor of Kodai Senga. We're going to take a little time out here. We're going to come back and carry on with the National League. Hang tight, everybody. We'll be right back after this. Appreciate you for hanging in here with us. You're listening to Last Perhaps Baseball's YouTube channel and the Japan Baseball Report. We'll be right back after this. You are listening to the Japan Baseball Report brought to you by Last Perhaps Baseball. If you are into the NPB, be sure to join us for our listening parties and live English commentary on the Last Perhaps Baseball YouTube channel beginning March 28th, 2025. If you're just here for the podcast, it can be found on YouTube and wherever you download your podcasts. Welcome back, everybody. Our next up is the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they've got the three-headed Japanese monster. We'll kick it off with Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who is expected to start the season as the opener versus the Chicago Cubs in Japan on March the 18th. He has ramped it up early in the spring. He's already got 8 innings under his belt, but he's had a bit of a rocky spring. He has not been sharp as of yet. Yamamoto has appeared in 3 games, all starts. He's worked 8 innings. He's allowed 11 hits, 5 runs, all of which have been earned, walking 2 and striking out 7. But one would have to think that going back to Japan and pitching at the Tokyo Dome, he will be ready to go. Just has to sort himself out a little bit here. Well, that is the first one. The other one is Shohei Ohtani. And Shohei Ohtani is coming off of off-season shoulder surgery. That hasn't slowed him down. He's going to take the mound, they say, more in May, or at least the expectations for him to do it. But as the hitting side has gone for him in 4 games, he is 5-for-12 at the plate. He's got a double, a homer, an RBI, and he's hitting .417. So Ohtani not breaking a sweat, picking up pretty much where he left off in 2024. And the third piece of the puzzle, well, it is also expected that Roki Sasaki is going to get a start in Japan. Sasaki is probably going to be in the March 19th game, Game 2. He made 1 spring training appearance versus the Reds, and he has looked good. He worked 3 innings, allowed 2 hits. He'd walked 1 and struck out 5. And for those of you who do listen to our channel, one of the things that Sasaki has, he's got a forkball as well as a fastball that is more than a plus, and both of those pitches are plus pitches. But I've often commented and said, I really think that once the major leaguers get on to the forkball, and if it's not forking on the day, he's got to have an off-speed pitch. I'm not a big fan of his curveball at this point, but I really think that he's got to develop some sort of a changeup that will get the hitters out in front. And if he could do something like that, especially Major League Baseball, facing the Dominicans, the Venezuelans, and the Americans, that is something that would be able to get them out in front and maybe be able to put some hitters away. But he's going to still need a little bit of work. And I think that Sasaki will have a decent year this year, but I don't think it's going to be as big a year as maybe some people might anticipate or expect. He's going to go through his moments of adjustments. Well, that is Roki, and we're going to move it over as we've got a couple more in the National League to finish off. The former Chinichi Dragon, Shinsuke Ogasawara, he has joined the Washington Nationals. He's already appeared in three ballgames, and he has struggled a little bit. Going over into this season, I thought he'd be a younger version of Shota Imanaga. At least he reminds me of that. And we think the Nationals have an under-the-radar steal here. So Ogasawara, I would expect, is going to eat up a lot of innings on the mound for the Nats. He's been roughed up a little bit in his outings. As we said, he is 1-1 in the spring training in three games. He's worked 4 2/3 innings, scattering 9 hits, 6 runs, 4 of which have been earned, walking 2 and striking out 4, and he's got an ERA of 7.71. But the Washington Nationals, and of course, pitching for the Chinichi Dragons last year, he knows what it's like to be pitching on ball clubs that need a little bit of help. And certainly Washington does it. But good news for him is help is on the way in Washington with that young outfield with James Wood, Dylan Cruz, and a bunch of others on the way. The future looks bright in Washington. Our next and final one in the National League is former Hanshin Tiger pitcher Koyo Aoyagi, the sidewinder who inked a minor league deal with Philadelphia. He was posted, but only was able to get himself a minor league deal. But the Phillies expect that he's not just there as a depth piece. They expect him to push and to possibly be in the bullpen at some capacity on with regularity at the big league level. He was 61-47 in the NPB with a career 3.08 ERA. His big year was in 2022 when he was 13-4. And not to mention that he was a big part of the Tigers' success in recent years, especially as they had got and won the 2023 Japan Series. But he's not an overpowering arm. He is striking out 6.7 hitters per 9 innings, and he does walk a few too many, as he has walks 3 per 9 innings. So Aoyagi is going to be someone that the Phillies are going to rely on as someone out of the bullpen, certainly a different look. And when major league hitters haven't seen that, certainly the first time through the league, should be something that he should be able to do. Hang tight, everybody. We're going to be right back in just a few moments. We're going to take a little break. We'll come back and look at the American League when we return. Japan Baseball Report has been brought to you by Last Graphs Baseball. If you would like to reach us with questions or comments, our email address is info@lastgraphsbaseball.com. We'll respond to as many comments and questions in the upcoming episodes that we can. We appreciate your listenership and look forward to seeing you at one of our live stream listening parties this season. We skip over to the American League, as there's 5 players currently on American League rosters that are either A, fighting for a roster spot, or at least positionally where they would fit in their respective teams' lineups or on the mound. First one is Masataki Yoshida, who's coming off of major offseason surgery. It was a labrum tear in his shoulder, and that was often talked about an offseason trade. They did make some moves. They lost Tyler O'Neill to the Red Sox to free agency, and so the new look outfield does not have Yoshida playing in front of the Green Monster. It's going to be Jaron Duran, who's going to move from center field to left. Sedena Rafaela is going to move from the infield into center field, and Willier Abreu, who is looking like he is going to be there for a while in Boston, is going to take over in right field. Yoshida can play, but what we noticed was he is not very good defensively, and the Monster can typically hide some poor defensive play if you can learn how to play it. And on the road, though, is a different kettle of fish, because his inability will start to become magnified depending upon the fields where you're at. But Yoshida's defensive play, he is a liability on that side. So the Red Sox have to look at it and say, well, what can we get from Yoshida? They do get some offense, and he's off to a really good start in spring training. as he's only played three games. He's 4-for-8, and he's got himself a double and four RBIs in that time period. And so with Yoshida, he's going to get that opportunity to swing the bat. I don't know if he's going to be a full-time DH. They have to sort out the infield because they did sign Alex Bregman. There's talk about Devers not wanting to get off of third base. And if Devers becomes the full-time DH, you've got both Yoshida and Devers swinging from the left side. And Devers, I think it's just too early for him to become a full-time designated hitter. Possibly leave him at third and put Bregman at second. But then that leaves Yoshida as the opportunity to be getting some at-bats as a DH and occasionally in the field. So we'll see how that all sorts itself out. But Masataka Yoshida, possibility of maybe being dealt at some point. Keep your eyes on that, as he will be dangled more than likely to other teams around the league. Next one up is Yusei Kikuchi, a new team, new look, as he is looking to be the ace of the Los Angeles Angels. And Kikuchi, he began his career with the Mariners. They had, after his free agency was done, he signed with the Toronto Blue Jays. Blue Jays flipped them last year to the Houston Astros, where he performed pretty well. And now he's got a free agent offering, or a free agent signing with the Angels. And so it is expected that he is going to be the opening day starter. And he is also going to be the ace of the staff. Kikuchi, Tyler Anderson, it was like Jose Soriano, Kyle Hendricks, and Reed Detmers are going to be the staff in Los Angeles. With some of the tweaks offensively, they think they can compete. They only won 63 games last year. And if I had to look at the Angels, I would say they're probably going to push to win about 70 games. They have a revamped bullpen as well. In fact, I think the bullpen might be one of the highlights of that pitching staff. Might even be better than the starting staff. And so that is where it stands. Well, Kikuchi has had a bit of a rough go of it so far here in the spring. He's appeared in one game. That was against the Dodgers. He worked 2 2/3 innings, allowed 3 hits. 2 runs all were earned. He walked 1 and struck out 3, and he's got that ERA of 6.75. So all early indications, and with small sample size, we'll have to see how Kikuchi plays out moving forward. Our next one up is a Detroit Tiger in Kenta Maeda. Maeda is getting also a little bit on in age. The former Hiroshima Carp had played a number of years in the big leagues. He appeared with the Minnesota Twins, also with the Los Angeles Dodgers. But Maeda had some problems last year. He came in as a starter. Tigers had given him a 2-year deal. Now this year he starts in his second year of a 2-year deal in Detroit. But he was terrible as a starter last year. But he seemed to settle in the long relief or coming out of the pen after an opener had started. And so he seems to have found himself in that role. But the Tigers, going into spring training, figured that he'd be battling for one starting position. Well, as it turns out now, Alex Cobb is injured. And it looks like he's in a battle with Casey Mize, Matt Manning, Keiter Montero, and others for a fourth or a fifth spot in the rotation. So how's he done? Well, right now he has appeared in 3 games. He's got no wins and 1 loss. He's worked 8 2/3 innings. He's allowed 6 hits, 3 runs, all earned, walked 1, and struck out 14. He's got an ERA of 3.12. Well, one of the things the Tigers emphasized, Maeda in recent years did not like to throw a lot in the offseason. He wouldn't start throwing until really just before training camp. And the Tigers really pushed him to change that approach this year. So he threw more, ramping up early. So they're expecting results, and they really are hoping that he can come out of the gate and give him some vintage Maeda like he was with the Dodgers, or even his time in Minnesota when he was at sometimes just absolutely lights out. So his off-season workout and his off-season load is going to be something that we'll keep our eye on here. And now if the Tigers are ready to do it. But it's the fans of Detroit who are going to get on him because they weren't happy with him last year. And if he comes out to a good start and gives the Tiger fans what they want, I'm sure that they would probably call off the dogs on Kenta Maeda, although he's going to have to produce moving forward. Next one is Tomoyuki Sugano of the Baltimore Orioles. Sugano at 35 years old, he's just a solid mound presence. What a move this was for the Orioles to bring him in with their young starters. And hopefully he can rub off on some of them, just his professional approach the way he goes about his business. Sagano, he's worked in a couple of games in spring training yet to allow an earned run. He has pitched in four innings, allowed four hits, walked a couple, struck out a couple. But Sagano, in often ways, I was thinking about this the other day, that he kind of reminds me at this point in his career. He's 35 years old. He's come across, and it's a lot like Iwakuma, who pitched for the Mariners in Seattle, who was the number two to Felix Hernandez for a few seasons, came across on the north side of 30 and still was able to give some good years. And Sagano, if he can do that and steady the pitching staff, it certainly is a shot in the arm for Baltimore to be able to hopefully get some of their other younger players moving forward. We have one last one that we want to discuss, and this one here is Shintaro Fujinami, and he is with the Seattle Mariners. And unfortunately for him, Mount Fuji began his career. He signed with the Oakland A's. He was flipped over to Baltimore, and then he ended up in the Mets camp last year. I think it's going to be really, really difficult for him to get a sniff at the Mariners, at least out of spring training. He's not been very good. In three games, he's worked 2 2/3 innings. He's allowed a couple of hits, three walks, three strikeouts, and he's got an ERA of 13.5. And Fujinami, the thing there is you don't throw over 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. You want somebody who can throw hard, and hopefully you can tweak them. Everybody looks at it and says, hey, maybe I can do something with them to try to get some more command of his pitches. That is something that he has struggled with over the last few years, and it might be a spot where he may not have a spot in Major League Baseball after a while. That is something that we'll have to keep an eye on. But that is Shintaro Fujinami, and that is the Japan Baseball Report for this week here. We appreciate you guys checking in. We are going to be dropping a couple others here in the next couple days in succession. We've fallen a little bit behind. We're almost on our Tohoku Rakuten Golden Eagles report, as well as we'll give you another update from the spring in Japan. This is full-on games now going on in the NPB exhibition season. We are less than 3 weeks away, and our first games we will be looking at will be on Friday the 28th, and hopefully you guys can join us for some of that stuff on our YouTube channel. Once again, everybody, we appreciate you guys for checking in with us. We hope you guys have yourself a great evening, and we will see you again soon on the Last Props Baseball YouTube channel.
Are you into slow motion video of hitting and pitching mechanics? Last Props Baseball's YouTube channel has been updating our database. During the 2025 season, we'll be uploading more video with our thoughts and analysis. If you're just here for the podcast, you're listening to the Japan Baseball Report found on the Last Props Baseball YouTube channel, wherever you download your podcasts.